Good morning. On Sunday, March 17th, I gave a very short Dharma talk, just about 15 minutes, and then we went into our annual meeting. And the talk was not recorded due to a technical error, so I am recording it now. And the talk is called The Breeze. It's in five parts, and I just wrote it out. "The breeze alone is worth it," said Joan. We were sitting at the table outdoors under the blossoming crabapple tree, a group of us, brothers, sisters, in-laws, at the cabin, the family cabin on the Rush River, nothing fancy. It was spring with green grass, blue sky, and pink blossoms falling, but an especially hot day for spring. "The breeze alone is worth it." This was said by Joan, Kathy's oldest sister, whom we had brought out to the cabin for the weekend, who was so dear to us all, who would be considered quite unusual to the average person, but was not at all unusual to us. We knew that she heard voices and talked back to them and lived in an institution and lived in her mind in her own way. Dear Joan, who had a childlike demeanor, and when I would sit with her, in her room, sitting always was enough. We would talk sometimes, but when we didn't, sitting was enough. Things were always enough for her, and I thought we had a special understanding. We had been talking that afternoon at the table about the cabin. What will happen to it? The previous generation will soon come to an end. Will we keep it? Will we sell it? Who will do the work? It's a lot of work. It's a lot of money. The consensus seemed to be at this moment at this table that we couldn't let it go. And then we felt a gentle stirring of the air. "The breeze alone is worth it," said Joan. That kind of sealed the deal for everyone. Joan was like Lee. Kath and I have this in common. Our oldest sibling for both of us was mentally challenged and lived most of their adult lives in institutions. And we had that common experience of experiencing their ability to just be. Me and Lee tossing a baseball at the county home. He would just stop sometimes and pause and take everything in, not thinking, but blending in, simply being, to the point of not even being aware of simply being. There in that oak grove, which could be a little oppressive on a hot day, but yes, the breeze was there too. We learned so much, Kathy and I, from this presence. The one behind is helped by the one ahead. But who can say who is behind and who is ahead? I have this vision of Kathy and me being led by Joan and Lee, the most damaged of us. But who can say? Is this where we got it? Is this where we got it? This thing that we do? I think yes. The breeze alone, there's nothing like it. I'm working outside in the fields, harvesting small trees, lifting them by their heavy root balls, their sharp, tight branches sticking my face. And it's a hot day, and I'm sweating all over. And it's only 1 o'clock and still 4 hours until we can drive the 2.5 miles to Lake Okoboji and jump in. It's so hot. And the breeze comes up and it's so lovely. Lovely is a good word for it because lovely is a soft, caressing sort of word. The breeze brushes you so gently, it caresses you. Without real contact, it caresses you and you are right there with it. There is no space between it and you. You are the breeze. You are taken out of yourself. Part two. Shakyamuni Buddha, before he was the Buddha, subjected himself to endless privations. He meditated in graveyards. He wore clothing that he had gathered from the dead. He stopped eating, or he ate only pine needles. He became as thin as a person can be and still be alive. He practiced in the wilderness where the wild beasts lived. He chose no comfort whatsoever. He did this for years, All over India, people did this. They thought that this was the path to some kind of liberation or redemption. They thought that if they subjected themselves to extreme privations, they could conquer the body and free the mind and find an end to suffering. To them, it appeared that the way to end suffering was through suffering. Until, finally, Shakyamuni found himself sitting in meditation in a graveyard toward evening on a hot day. And what is it that came to him? What is it that came to him, which would lead the way to his enlightenment, which would change humanity forever? It was the breeze. A refreshing breeze came to him as he sat there on that hot evening in the graveyard, and it felt pleasant on his skin. And he was reminded of when he was 9 years old, when he sat under a rose apple tree and experienced, without effort, an incredible feeling of ease, a feeling of as-isness, a feeling of things just as they be. That feeling of ease later, much later, would be portrayed in the figures of the royal ease bodhisattvas, hand on knee, relaxed and yet awake, present in as-isness, just so. And this moment in the graveyard, was the birth in Shakyamuni's mind of the middle way. You don't have to subject yourself to extreme privations. You don't have to hurt yourself, nor do you become lax. You practice the middle way. You enjoy the breeze. Everyone thinks that the turning point of Shakyamuni's life was when he sat under the Bodhi tree and became enlightened. And they think that's what we should concentrate on and that's what we should emulate. But I think no. I think the real turning point of Shakyamuni's life was when he found the middle way. The turning point was when he realized that you don't have to hurt yourself. Everything naturally fell into place after that. He took rice milk provided by the young girl Sujata, and he regained his strength, and he went to the Bodhi tree, and he became enlightened. And so it can be with us. We think we have to hurt ourselves. We think that somehow, if we can deprive ourselves, if we can induce suffering in ourselves, we can somehow be redeemed. This is deep in our psyche. Everyone has it. Even Shakyamuni had it for years and years. It's deep in the human psyche, and it is encouraged by shame and guilt and strange ideas. The turning point is not when we become enlightened, forget enlightened. The turning point is when we stop hurting ourselves. The turning point is when we accept the breeze, the turning point, childlike. Part three, breeze, the breeze. That's one of those lovely words because it sounds like and feels like the thing it describes. The wind is kind of sharp. The storm strikes you, and the tornado tears you up. But the breeze comes around your ears and caresses your face, and it takes its sweet time, and it wants to linger. Those double vowels are so sweet, like food. You can have your victuals or your snacks. I want food. I like to meet with my friends. I like to see the sea. And it's like in Ireland, happy St. Patrick's Day, the way they say my name. Here, I'm Mr. O'Toole. And it's kind of punchy and businesslike, kind of utilitarian, Mr. O'Toole. But in Ireland, the way they say it, I'm Mr. O'Toole. Mr. O'Toole, as if my name had four or five O's in it. And in saying it, they're caressing every one of those O's with their soft Irish voice. The Irish, they can be harsh, but they can be so very soft in the way they speak. The breeze and the reeds and the loch and the soft rain, it's all in there in the voice. There is a place for welcoming softly each thing in this world. The suffering does not result from letting ourselves feel good. The suffering comes from trying to hold on to feeling good. Part four. The breeze comes, and then it goes. Part five. In Gakudo Yojin Shu, Guidelines for Studying the Way, Dogen says, when you hear a song of praise sung by a Kanara god or a Kalavinka bird, let it be as the evening breeze brushing against your ears. A Kanara god is a musician in the Deva realm, and a Kalavinka bird is a mythical bird who sings with a beautiful voice. When we hear them with their songs of praise, we must let those songs be as the evening breeze brushing against our ears. When you hear the song of praise, and it could be the soft rain or the soft wind rattling the leaves of the cottonwood tree, when you hear it sung, let it be as the evening breeze. And anything that comes, the cry of a child, the call of the loon, the motorcycle rumbling by the zendo, the 5 seconds of hip hop, let it brush your ears. Just brush it, no more. Dogen goes on, if you see the beautiful face of Mao Xiang or Xi Xi, let it be like the morning dewdrops coming into your sight. Mao Xiang and Xi Xi were two beautiful women of ancient China. If you see them, let it be like the morning dew, the ephemeral dew, the dew that goes away, like the sound goes away, like the breeze goes away, like beauty goes away. Enjoy it and let it be. Let it go away. That's the thing. Not wrong to enjoy it, wrong to keep it. Dogen goes on. Freedom from the ties of sound and form naturally accords with the essence of the way-seeking mind. Freedom from the ties of sound and form naturally accords with the essence of the way-seeking mind. This section of this fascicle is about the thought of enlightenment, about what is enlightenment in our mind. It's not about a future state. It's not about a transformation. It's not even about me or you. It's about freedom from ties of sound and form. It's about this, just now, no future state. The breeze, or the lack of breeze, is the whole deal. Practice is enlightenment. Sound and form, yes. The falling apple blossoms, the stirring of the breeze, it came and went. Joan and Lee, we love them and they made us who we are, and they're both gone. Gone with the breeze. Let it be fully here, as long as we can draw out the word, fully here, and let it then be gone again. Thank you.